Central Convention Protocol matters that we need to attend to, and also the other issue that we will look at today, colleagues will know we did get a presentation on the Green Fund, but it was our view that the presentation did not go deep enough. We then requested the department to come back so that we also interact with that presentation. I've also been approached by the department that perhaps as they present on the Basel Convention for our endorsement, or for endorsement of Parliament, that they would also like to make some input on waste matters. Whilst we did not find this to be problematic, because we will have Chile a broad, meaningful engagement on the waste economy, our view is that let's not take shortcuts. Let's just deal with the Basel Convention and await, as in our program, an engagement with the department on waste. Where are we? Waste industry. Are we winning the war on ensuring that waste is recycled? Do we have recycling industry as other countries have? Issues of our landfills. Are we winning the war on ensuring that we don't get an economy getting to the landfills? All these matters, our view is that let's just park them. Let's have, of course, there's also issues of pricing, waste pricing that we have all agreed on. So I will then say, why would we not have had any problem with any presentation, but so that we take all of us on board and we have ample time to discuss the waste economy, let's just flag the waste part on your presentation and just give it the Basel Convention. And I hope that we will not be creating too much difficulty. Colleagues, you will also know that as we meet, we also heard this morning that one of our leaders in the country, leader who has fearlessly contributed immensely to our liberation struggle, Mam Isithwalandwe Ruth Mompati, died last night. And I think she was one. By the way, she was also a member here in Parliament in 1994. But apart from that, she has been an ambassador. She was in Parliament, and also she has been, I think, the mayor of some of our district municipalities. And I think it will only be befitting colleagues and leaders and members from the department that we all stand and observe a moment of silence in honor of the scholars. Thank you very much. May I have so rest in peace. There we are. I've then been requested that instead of us starting with Green Fund, let's start with Basel Convention. And don't keep us here for too long, presenters, because we have budget issues to work on. And we have our debate on Thursday, this Thursday. So debate on vote 27, we must be ready for that debate come this Thursday. So don't keep up too long. The acting DG, the ball is now in your court.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. And in order to not keep you too long, I won't do the whole round of introductions. Just to say that we have the DDG for Waste and Chemical Management, as well as the team of Chief Directors, both responsible for waste regulation and for chemicals, present here. And Mr. Gordon will then introduce the chemicals team, and then I will introduce the Green Fund with the presenter you are quite familiar with.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, Honourable Members and colleagues. I think some of you may know me already. It's Mark Gordon, the Deputy Director General for Chemicals and Waste Management. And thanks, Chair, for your direction. I think it will be more meaningful and prudent for us to come at another stage and give a very, very comprehensive presentation on the waste economy and a lot of things that have been developing between us and Treasury as well around the pricing strategy and other waste streams. It would be better if we could come back to do that. But allow me to just talk to and introduce the subject matter for today, which is been of concern to many, has been raised in this House a few times around the transboundary movement of hazardous waste, which is controlled by an international convention called the Basel Convention. It's been in the process on the amendments to one of the clauses there has been in the making and the process for a long time. South Africa is yet to ratify that amendment. So we're going to go through that detail very quickly and to introduce Mr. Obed Baloyi. He's the Chief Director for Chemicals Management in the department. The others in the back here is Mamoza Africa on waste management, specifically on the Rhodesia plant, Mr. Harto Makwena. He is on the Waste Bureau and the Planting Strategy, and Tabofa is also on the international chemicals side, and I think Lisa will introduce the other members. So, over to you, Mr. Bullock. Thank you.
Maybe before he starts, I think it's only fair that he knows. At times we take it for granted that people who come here are people that have always come here, and they know who's on this side of the table. My apologies. I'm Jackson Tembu, the chair of the Portfolio Committee on Environmental Affairs. Obviously, I'm from the governing party.
I'm Simon Makovent, a member in this committee, a whip from the ANC as well.
I am Thomas Adebe. In the name of this committee, I'm from the official opposition party, the DA. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Joni Tienkamp, also from the DA. And I'm
Hilda Yambi, a member of this committee from the ANC.
I'm Helen Kekana, portfolio committee of environmental assets. Also, Monifatimla.
Good morning, I'm Mashile Maubani, Language Services Parliament.
Good morning, I'm Johanna Mugemalilege, member of the committee.
Dumela, Patrick Mabilo, from the African National Congress, member of this committee.
Ubabushele Ndelo, member of the committee, with National Freedom Party. Thank you.
Did you say the National Bedroom Party? What did you say? I didn't hear that right. Okay, whatever. Okay, I'm going to... That's an enlightenment of Shalemba. These are all members of the Portfolio Committee on Environmental Affairs. And these are members who work very hard. As you will know, normally we are expected to meet only on Tuesdays. But at the instance of these members, we also now have some programs where we meet on Fridays. So we have a team that is very dedicated to us saving the world for future generations. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Good morning, and good morning, Honorable Members. As introduced, my name is Obed Badoy. I am a Chief Director responsible for Chemicals Management in the Department of Environmental Affairs. As the DDG has indicated, the making of the ban amendment has taken quite a while, and as well, it's gone through cabinet, it was approved, and obviously now it needs to be approved by Parliament for ratification. So we're here to present, to give the background information and what the Ben Amendment is all about, and then we then look into the recommendation. Next slide. The purpose is basically to request the Portfolio Committee on Environment to approve the ratification by South Africa of the Ben Amendment. With regards to background on the Basel Convention, it is an international treaty that regulates the transboundary movement of hazardous waste and other waste. The reason this treaty came into effect was because there was a lot of dumping of hazardous waste specifically into developing countries. And those developing countries without the capacity to be able to deal with that hazardous waste. So the reason the Basel Convention exists is to be able to regulate the movement of this hazardous waste and other waste. How it works, it applies the prior informed consent procedure, meaning that shipments made without consent are illegal unless there is a special agreement. What that means is that a country that is exporting to South Africa must be able to get consent from South Africa to say it is fine. If it is for disposal, we do have capacity to be able to dispose of that waste. So any waste that comes without that consent from South Africa is considered as illegal shipment of waste into the country. The Basel Convention states that hazardous waste should be treated and disposed of as close to where they are produced as possible. And that's again the intention that the producers of this waste should be the ones that generally deal with those waste as close to where the waste has been generated as possible. Because obviously there are many issues that happen with regards to long transportation of this hazardous waste. The convention obliges its parties to ensure that hazardous waste and other waste are managed and disposed of in an environmentally sound manner. As I indicated, many of the developing countries do not have capacity to be able to manage specifically hazardous waste in an environmentally sound manner, and that is what the Basel Convention obliges all the parties to comply to. It was developed in response to the dumping of hazardous waste by developing countries, as I indicated, and South Africa became the party to the Basel Convention in 1994. The convention was adopted in 1992, and we became a party to the convention in 1994. Next slide, please. In 1995, the convention was amended. So basically, since the adoption of the convention in 1992, there was discussion about limiting or stopping disposal or transportation of hazardous waste from developing countries into developed countries. That was part of the decision. So in the records since 1992, it was in the records of the meetings of the parties that hazardous waste should not be transported to developing countries by developed countries. But unfortunately, because it was not part of the text of the convention, many countries did not comply to the decision. So then it was suggested that that decision should be made part of the text of the convention. That's why then the decision was taken as it is and put into the text, and that's where then we started having the Ben Amendment. since 1995 that the Ban Amendment has been there. As I indicated, it prohibits the export of hazardous waste from specifically the EU and OECD countries as well as Liechtenstein to members of the Basel Convention who are not from these countries, and mostly obviously it is the developing countries which Africa and South Africa is part of. The ban was implemented to protect developing countries from receiving imports of hazardous waste from developed countries. The concern grew as a result of the practice of shipment of hazardous waste from industrialized countries to developing countries, and which those developing countries unfortunately do not have the capacity to be able to handle such waste. At the first COP, as I indicated, in 1992, the parties adopted a decision requesting those industrialized countries to refrain from exporting hazardous waste for disposal in developing countries. In 1994, the Conference of the Parties to the Basel Convention agreed to ban immediately all exports of hazardous waste from OECD to non-OECD countries for final disposal. And they also agreed to ban the export of hazardous waste intended for recovery and recycling by the 31st of December 1997. The Ban Amendment is constituted for a new preambular paragraph to the Basel Convention, and that is Article 4A and Annex 7, Roman Figure 7, to the Convention. Now, since 1995, that the Basel Ban Amendment has been adopted, it is still not in force. And the agreement on the entry into force of the Basel Ban Amendment was reached at the COP, the 10th COP, that is in 2011. You can see, I mean, since it was adopted in 1995, then the agreement came on in October 2011. So it has taken a long time to be implemented, this amendment. It still has, I indicated, has not entered into force because there's still not sufficient ratification. It will only enter into force globally once 3/4 of those parties that were parties when the amendment was adopted have deposited their instruments of ratification. So at the Conference of the Parties in 1995, when the Ban Amendment was adopted, there were 88 parties that were part of that adoption. And currently we only have 49 of those 88 parties that were parties in the 1995 adoption having ratified. So there's still a need for 16 more ratifications to be able to bring the ratification into force. These are some of the reasons that we recommend that South Africa should ratify the Basel Ban Amendment. One is that as South Africa, we already apply the notification and control system as set out in the Basel Convention. As I indicated, there is no country that's allowed to ship its waste without the consent of the country receiving that. And this we work together with ITAC through their legislation, which is International Trade Administration Act. So they issue permits for importation of hazardous waste into the country. So, and we work together with them as the Department of Environmental Affairs. So if they receive a permit application to bring in hazardous waste, they give that to the Department of Environmental Affairs to make sure that we recommend that it is okay that waste can be able to come through. If it is for disposal, we would have assessed whether we have capacity in the country to be able to deal with that hazardous waste. So there is coordination between ourselves and the ITEC, and this is done through a memorandum of understanding. Next slide. And this is another point, specifically coming from the AMSEN. This was at the 12th session, the Africa Ministers of Environment. This was held in South Africa in 2008. African Ministers of the Environment calls for those African countries which have not yet done so to ratify the Ben Amendment. I mean, Africa suffers, obviously, the issue of illegal dumping into the continent with regards to this hazardous waste. So at UNCTAD in 2008, there was a request that all those African countries that have not done so yet, they should ratify the ban. South Africa obviously supports the objectives of the ban, recognizing that Africa, in particular, has no capacity to adequately deal with hazardous waste. The Ben Amendment will make a significant contribution to reducing Africa's problems regarding dumping of hazardous waste. South Africa has increasingly experienced imports of used products such as used tires, electronic equipment and others being imported as used goods, but often as waste. Ratifying the Ben Amendment will have no negative economic or other implications for South Africa. As I indicated, we already restrict imports of hazardous and other waste from countries other than SADC. And most of the waste that we receive in the countries come from SADC because we're supporting them as most of the SADC countries do not have capacity to dispose or recover hazardous waste. So we do take a lot of waste in support of those countries, depending obviously on the capacity to be able to do so as a country. Excuse me. It will only have positive implications for the environment and human health. South Africa, in line with the Ben Amendment, does accept waste from other countries, as I indicated, to dispose or be able to recover. Exports of hazardous waste and other waste from South Africa. So if it happens that South Africa has waste that we're not able to deal with, the Basel Ben Amendment will not limit us as a country from exporting that waste, for example, to the OECD countries or other non-OECD countries. So we still will be able to have the ability to export that waste to outside countries to be able to deal where we do not have the capacity to deal with that. We will be able to continue to send waste abroad for recovery and disposal as it is in accordance with the convention. Next one. This is almost the last slide. In the development of this position with regards to ultimately coming to Parliament to request Parliament to endorse the ratification, we went in consultation. One, we consulted the Department of Justice and Correctional Services. This was to check whether the ratification will not conflict with any South African domestic laws, and they indicated that there will not be any conflict. We also consulted the state law advisor at the Department of International Relations and Cooperation also to ascertain whether the ban will not conflict with South Africa's international obligations, and indeed there was no conflict with any international obligations. In addition to the above, other stakeholders that consulted, we consulted through the Stakeholder Committee on Chemicals Management. Other government departments, stakeholders include the trade and industry, agriculture, forestry and fisheries, DERCO, Department of Health, Labour, Science and Technology, Transport, and NGOs such as Groundwork are part of the consultations, and industry associations such as CAIA and ASCASA. Next slide. So having said all that, we said we recommend that the portfolio committee approves that South Africa ratifies the Basel Convention ban amendment so that we become part of the numbers to try to assist the amendments to be able to come into effect as quickly as we can. But as I indicated, I mean, this has taken quite a long time. We're working with other African countries too as well, it came up, to try to get as many African countries to ratify the Basel Ben Amendment. Thank you very much.
It is
Chair, thanks. Just to conclude on that and to place this in a broader context, I think, Chair, this supports the notion broadly that Africa, including South Africa, should not become the dumping grounds for the rest of the world as far as these dangerous chemicals are concerned. And to give you examples, in the past, it has happened in South Africa that huge shipments of very dangerous chemicals, including mercury, was dumped in South African KZN. We are still dealing with a legacy of cleaning up the mercury in that part of Keso Ridge in KwaZulu-Natal. But in other parts of South Africa as well, we are finding hotspots, and the work on cleaning up, you know, continues. But at an international level and with our negotiations internationally and with Africa, within BRICS and IPSA as well, there's major support from the developing nations that we should take a stance against this dumping kind of syndrome from the developing developed countries into South Africa. Second point is that there's huge support from the NGOs. We work very closely with some of the social movements, including industry, NEDLAC, and then other groups in South Africa, that even the private sector and the chemicals industries also support the notion that we should not be open to these practices. So thank you very much, Chair.
That is, now why do you wear a suit that looks like mine? Colleagues, open for discussion. Yeah. Mavilo, Babu Pumane. Yeah.
Wait.
Okay, thanks, Chair. I think, firstly, let me indicate that I do agree with the spirit of the particular convention. I agree with it totally. But there are just a few things that I need to understand, which I believe will help us and the country as we ratify it. Firstly, what are usually the reasons, or shall I say the excuse given, why the developed countries can't necessarily, even if they have the capacity to dispose of this hazardous waste, don't they do it in their own country? What is usually the excuse? Why should they just dump that in Africa and not the instrument of ratification? What does it entail? Other than just us recommending that fine, let it be ratified, what does it entail? The third, and I just have got one more. What is the incentive? I think this question can be even put the other way around. But I'm saying, what is the incentive of the developing countries not ratifying? Why should they be comfortable maintaining the status quo? If it's wrong to receive or for developed countries to dump hazardous waste in their country, yet they do not want to ratify. Yes, what is the incentive? I can put it differently. But I think we'd rather be diplomatic. I'm saying, what is the incentive of the developing countries not ratifying? If they were to ratify, does everything good, as you say? But why then should they favor not to ratify? The last one, under which circumstances should South Africa, after having ratified, receive the shipment of this hazardous waste just in order for us to export that to OECD countries, even as they have capacity? And the U.S. just said that, Mr. Balot. And I'm saying, why should we first have to receive this hazardous waste, knowing that we may not have capacity at times to dispose of that waste ourselves, but just to export that elsewhere to those countries that have deficit for developing countries. Under which circumstances should that happen? Thanks, Chair.
Thanks very much, Chair. I think I've been covered by the honourable member. But what I would like to know, what have they seen of in accepting the waste from other countries as South Africans? I would like to know the financial implications of that. And yeah, I think that's the only question that I would like to ask on that, because the honourable member has just covered it. Thank you.
Abilo.
No, thanks, Chair. I just want to check since the ban was implemented, to what extent has that prevented the proliferation of hazardous waste in our country? Except the two mentions of KZN and other, to what extent? That would be the first question. Secondly, what recourse we have as a country if the EU and all the developed world continue to bring their hazardous waste to South Africa? What recourse we have in terms of penalties and deterrence? And lastly, what does it mean if just check our capacity of monitoring and compliance, but I'm covered by the stage. Thanks.
Yeah, Malulek, Kekana, Sienka.
Thank you, Chef. It seems partly the question is Mr. Mandilos. Does the Basel Convention protect poor developing countries spectrum? For example, Chair, these poor countries might have received hazardous waste without knowing the risk. But is there a legal means to redress? Thank you, Chair.
Next.
Chair, I'm covered for some questions. Marpuso, yeah, because like in case gore a lefapha le ka re sedifaletsa gore goreng le diega mo dinageng di le 16 kwa ntle ga South Africa go tshegetsa manetlelelo le tumelelanong. Ke a leboga.
The question relates to what has been said on page 6 about the outstanding 16 countries that are still to ratify. Can the department share with us as to what exactly the reasons are for the slow pace in terms of ratification, with the exception of South Africa, because you are on course?
We are not on course. Ratified. Tiengam.
Thank you, Chair. I think I've been covered mostly, but what I would like to ask is, well, first of all, I'd like to say I do agree with the proposal and I think it's good, but if it doesn't have an, if it says somewhere that it doesn't have an economic effect, you know, when the dumping stops, if I can put it like that, right? So why did we take it in the first place? Why can't we stop it completely right now? So if it doesn't affect the economy, does that mean that it doesn't affect jobs, job creation, that kind of thing? And then if that doesn't, can we not then, as a department, maybe just say stop it completely? I mean, if these countries have the capacity, I mean, we could really use our resources elsewhere. And then maybe just a little bit more history. Why was it allowed in the first place that the countries could just use our continent as a dumping site, kind of a thing? Where did it start? I think if we have a little bit more information, we can maybe, like, you know, go forward from there.
Chair, I think this is, no, it's a comment, actually. It's a request for if the
Department of the Health could come back on the next day to give us more clarity and give us more details on this on the Basel Convention, and give us more details so that we intimately know what is contained there, so that we don't ask questions now. As you just mentioned, we still need to go and prepare for our debate. So I would request that we engage in the Department or the entity in the near future so that we know it intimately. Thank you.
But why did it take you this long now to bring this before Parliament? Now, you say that in 2008, ministers in Africa met and said we must speed up the process. But of course, this amendment was there already. We should have ratified it by then. Is there something wrong in the department? Because you must then tell us why. Did you ever bring it before the portfolio committee on environment or before parliament? And what were the reasons? If you did not, I can tell you, I only saw it in the ATC last week, and we are acting on it as this portfolio committee. Why did it take South Africa so many years? And you also know that South Africa will only have activated the ratification to this amendment to the Basel Convention through yourself. Hukum. One. Two. We talk about dumping of hazardous waste. Good, there's a Basel Convention. Now, I don't even know who Basel is. I think Colin is correct. We must even know who is this Basel. But there are so many other things that get dumped. And I'm raising this because we should have a holistic approach to Africa being a dumping ground. And I can tell you, I was reading the other day, how many Skorokoro cars are being dumped in Africa by Japan and other developed countries. At least we do have a law in South Africa where you can't dump second or third class cars in our country, but you can do so with pride in other nearby countries, but that affects us. Including your IT instruments, electronic waste. Now, how do the dumping of other things, apart from, of course, there is this Basel Convention as you speak about hazardous waste, but how do we deal with dumping, broadly speaking, as a political term? How do we, is there coordination within and without government on dealing with this dumping? You know, ma'am, Steenkamp has asked a wonderful question. Why are we a dumping ground? I think that question can be answered politically. Because we're exploited and people do whatever they do with what they've exploited, that what they've stolen from our shores, and whatever waste that emanates from what proceeds, they then want to still come and dump it on our shores. Very, very bad, very terrible. But the fundamental question, were you sleeping on the job by not bringing this before us? Thank you.
So Chair, I'm going to attempt to answer the easy questions. Mr. Baloy will answer the difficult ones. But I think I'd like to start by just addressing the, I think, kind of the theme question for today is, why has Africa become the dumping ground? And to attempt to answer in three areas. One is the issue around moral, the morality of this, right? And the morality and the ethics around why people dump. And secondly, is the issue around the economics, transboundary economics between the developing world and the developed world. And thirdly, it's in the area of technology. So I think on the morality side, it comes to the issue of the regulatory, evolution of regulatory frameworks, right? So the developed world, where they have evolved in terms of the environmental policies and in terms of environmental protection policies, they are far ahead of us. We, since 21 years now, we have been developing legislation, regulations, policies like it's coming out for years, right? They had had standards. Some of the standards prevented those companies from disposing of those waste chemicals in their own country. So their own countries banned them from disposing of those waste sludges and chemicals in their countries. They, and the example that I use is this historical problem of mercury. It was shipped to Africa and shipped to South Africa under the guise of recycling and recovering some of these metals like mercury. But our technology, we did not have the safeguards around the technology to actually do this. So that comes to the second aspect, that technologically, we don't have the infrastructure, the capability, and now to even deal with some of these waste streams. And yesterday we launched a bottling plant with the minister in Germany, where they're recycling, you know, waste plastic to make bottles for Coca-Cola. And there's to the whole issue around the technology that we never had before, but now have. So we evolve it, even with technology that we didn't have. And I think the area around the economics, it's far cheaper, like we have with current practices. It's cheaper for somebody to dispose of and dump the waste at the landfill site than it is to recycle. Hence what we've been doing now, and you know, I've shared before the portfolio committee, we have to correct the market failure, that it's cheaper to pollute. You see, that is the issue around the economics. It's cheaper to pollute. Unless you give the appropriate price to a waste stream, then people will not pollute. Now, that is why we've introduced the pricing strategy that we'll bring to the House next time, where we're saying that we have to afford some value to waste streams in order for it to become valuable and for them to recycle. So, Honorable Makabela, I think the excuse of those countries has been in the context that, one, we did not have the standards and the safeguards at that time to reject it, or we didn't have the legal instrument to say this is not allowed. And that has happened. We, since then, have been developing a number of legislation and regulatory instruments, and we still continue to do that. On the instrument of ratification, Mr. Baloy will address that. The issue around what incentive there is for developing countries, and I think, you know, to some extent I've addressed that. But at that time, we have had big companies, right? Companies that used to manufacture explosives, ammunition, chemicals that we're only finding out now, right? They were international companies that were operating in South Africa with headquarters in other parts of the world. And in some way, those companies have decided that some of these products could be either recycled, recovered, and eventually they were left as stockpiles, you know, abandoned stockpiles of chemicals that we're dealing with now in terms of the legacy. Then to the Honorable Bongani, I think in terms of the ban, we have not been receiving. We openly do not receive and refuse some of these hazardous waste streams. The application sometimes where we have the infrastructure. So we have some of the world-class landfill sites in South Africa. privately owned landfill sites that is capable of dealing with it and complying with all our legislation. So some of the hazardous waste streams can be easily dealt with. And where it can, sometimes we do allow these waste streams. And that's only within the SADC, and it's under very strict conditions where those countries do not have sometimes the technology and the infrastructure to deal with it. To Honorable Mabilo, I think we have prevented to a large extent the proliferation. So the examples I used, like stockpiles that were deposited and brought into this country more than about 25, 30 years ago. So then there's been no proliferation of hazardous waste. It's strictly controlled by our own permitting licensing system. There's applications between ourselves and DTI. ITAC is very strict control about even the import and export of hazardous waste. And between the hazardous landfill sites across the country, we easily have the capacity to treat and dispose of those waste streams safely. I think Mr. Baloy will answer Honorable Kekana's question on the ratifications and why so long. Honorable Steenkamp, I think the question on why us, I think to some extent I've answered that. But I think the why us question also applies to the whole of Africa. And if you think we are in a serious situation, there are some countries north of us where dumping occurs, you know, very, very habitually. And to some extent, you know, it's almost a kind of dependency where a lot of the economic support and financial support for those countries is coming from developed countries. And somehow, you know, that type of relationship is maintained. But speaking for us, I think over the last 20 years, we have really ratcheted up and tightened up our legislation in terms of the control and management of those waste streams. Honorable Bongani, the Basel Convention, yeah, we also thought it was the name of a person. It's the name of this city in Switzerland. So most of our conventions are named after cities, Geneva Convention, Montreal Protocol, and so forth. Stockholm as well. And so, Honorable Chair, I think in general, regarding like electronic waste, the next time we come here, we will share with you what the Minister prioritized in last year's budget speech. He prioritized three waste streams, which is electronic waste, plastics and packaging, and the lighting industry. Now, the lighting is a hazardous waste stream. Electronic waste, all the gadgets that we use have harmful products in them. She probably announced on Thursday as well some issues around how she's going to manage and prioritize, and there's a lot of work we've done with Treasury. And by the end of this year, there's going to be quite a significant move on managing electronic waste in South Africa with tariffs, etc. And that's the way the Bureau has been organized with the pricing strategy to deal with electronic waste. But I think, Chair, generally, it has been our concern. And we have been tackling it step by step. Electronic waste is a big issue for us. To a large extent, I think we've got a handle on chemicals and chemical waste. Electronic waste is something that we have to deal with. And I think in the past, our laws admittedly have been too lax. They have been too lax. And I think we have really, really tightened up. You know, we've amended the Waste Act and we've introduced new regulations on chemicals, new regulations on hazardous waste streams, new regulations on classification. And sometimes our own industry and private sector argue with us that, hey, they're getting too regulated. So there's a balance in how much we regulate to really looking at the economic benefits of recycling and reusing some of these waste streams for beneficiation purposes. So, thanks, Chair. I'm just going to ask Mr. Baloy to just go through the instrument of ratification, the why so long question. Unfortunately, I wasn't here at the time. He's got some history. How's that excuse? And also to deal with Honorable Kenyane's question as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Nabo. The instrument of ratification, as I indicated, I mean the amendment is in preamble. It's just a paragraph. So what we do in South Africa, we obviously, if it's approved, we will have it indicating that South Africa will be party to the Ben Amendment, and then it will be then taken to the Basel Secretariat and recorded as such that South Africa has accepted. That means we will obviously comply and implement the Basel Ben implementation. So the instrument of ratification will indicate our commitment to their paragraph that has been amended or inserted into the Basel Convention text. You also, Honorable Mokwela, asked the question of incentives of developing countries not ratifying. I think that links up with, I'll answer that, Honorable Kekana, with the 16 reasons for slow ratification by other countries, and Honorable Dickham, why was dumping allowed in the first place. I think DDG covered the issue of cheeks. As developing countries, and specifically Africa, we became cheap. I think the Honorable Chair used the word of exploitation as part of that. So I'll give you an example. In 2003, I think it was an English company that disposed lots of waste in Ivory Coast. In a farm, of a farm, they promised the farmer $100 a month. They call it storage. So they move from where they are, they come and store waste, hazardous waste in Ivory Coast. And that unfortunately ended up, because that waste was hazardous, it contained polychlorinated bioethanol. It killed 10 people, and many others suffered as a result. So it's the fact that it was exploitation, it was cheap to be able to come and dispose in Africa. They couldn't do that in their own countries. The slowness relates to capacity to implement, and Honorable Chairperson, I think this will also cover the question of where we're sleeping on the job. The answer is no, we're not sleeping on the job, and I don't believe the other countries as well. There is a concern about capacity to be able to implement. So as we become parties to this international agreement, the question that we always ask ourselves is, do we have capacity to be able to implement? In 2008, when Amsterdam was in South Africa, we did not even have a Waste Act in South Africa. The Waste Act came only into effect in 2009. So we did not have a single framework legislation that dealt with waste up until that time. So there has been work that has been happening to make sure that we are properly covered. We are currently busy developing import and export regulations, again, to try to supplement what the Basel wants to do. I indicated we work with ITEC with regards to issuing of permits, and their legislation came in as well, I mean, in 2003. So there has been capacity building within the department to make sure that we are able to implement the Basel thing, so that we just don't implement and are not able to we don't ratify and not able to implement. Honorable Mokwela, you asked about the circumstances of receiving hazardous waste and exported because we don't have capacity. That does not happen. I will clarify what I meant to say. So many other countries don't have capacity to treat or dispose of hazardous waste, so we receive it for treatment and disposal in South Africa where we have capacity. The way that we can be able that we need to export other that we may not have capacity to be able to deal with, I'm going to use some confusing terms, so that you can call us there. We are busy right now, for an example, phasing out polychlorinated bisphenol. This is a requirement of the Stockholm Convention. It is mostly used in oil. As we phase that out, we do not have capacity currently to be able to deal with that. The target is 2025. So as we taking it out of our oils and the electricity generation, the question is, what are we doing with it? Because we don't have capacity in the country, so we export it. We are dealing with gases, hydrofluorofluorocarbons. We are phasing those ones out. As we take them out of our air conditioning system, of our refrigeration systems, we do not have capacity to be able to dispose of them. And we don't obviously want just to open the canister and let them into the air, because that defeats the purpose. We have to capture them. We do not have facilities in the country to be able to destroy those. So those are the ones where that we will not be limited in. The Basel ban does not limit us in exporting the hazardous waste. So that we will still have that capacity to be able to, or ability to be able to export the hazardous waste that we generate. It's not the one that we import, but it's the one that we generate, and we do not have the capacity to be able to deal with that. The other issues is, I think it was on recall and redress, the issues of legal means. I mean, there are penalties for illegal shipment of waste according to the Basel Convention. But I want to indicate that from the chemical management sector, we're working now. You also asked the question, Honorable Mugilo, with regards to monitoring and compliance. We have a program in the department where we're training our colleagues in customs. One, to be able to identify these things. There's all these chemicals. There are chemicals that are not supposed to be coming into the country. They have been listed in the prohibited and restricted list. But because our customs officials are not chemists, they are not able to tell whether something that comes in a Coke is really a Coke and it's not Sprite. So somebody can put Sprite in a can of Coke and we think it's Coke. There is no testing capacity. We have started working together with our colleagues in customs to train the officials. We had a pilot late last year in Devon, and we are rolling that out. And we obviously are working as well with our Green Scorpion to promote the methods of compliance and monitoring to make sure that we are able to make sure that we keep South Africa safe. The white column I dealt with, I did say to Honorable Chairperson, important is to be for us to be able to build capacity, to be able to implement this. There was another point, Honorable Chair, where you just covered the issue of other things that are done, not necessarily just in South Africa, but
including both.
Correct. Correct. I'm going to use the ones that are close exist to waste. Close, maybe I'll steer away from that one. I'll use electronics. Electronics, for example, countries will ship computers as donations to developing countries. And they ship them as goods. And then they get into they get into South Africa, you try to switch that computer on or that cell phone on, it doesn't work. It came in as good. So it bypassed the Basel Convention because it came in as a good. And the Basel Convention only deals with waste. There is currently a conference of the parties meeting in Geneva. One of the most difficult tasks has always been the definition of what is waste and what is non-waste. So how do we know for sure that the computer that you say you're donating to a developing country is going to switch on and stay on at least for the next 18 months or so? It's not going to switch on and then the next day it's dead and automatically that becomes electronic waste for that receiving country. So there are guidelines. I'm not sure if they'll be able to finalize them. The meeting ends by the end of this week. I'm not sure if those guidelines will be able to be finalized, where it will clarify when does this goods start being waste, so that they just don't always come as goods, and within a day or two, automatically they become waste. I think I covered all that maybe the DDG had left out. Thank you.
This is before you come in. I don't know whether in the Basel Convention there is a requirement for a country to be able to meet the conditions. Because I think it's a political tool more than anything else. Where you as a country say, we agree that there shouldn't be hazardous waste going through our country as agreed in 1992. And then we come in 1994 as a democratic country, South Africa. We say, elite, we agree. Of course, we're even more revolutionary then. But what I don't understand, because we became signatories of the Basel Convention, we did not necessarily need to have the capacity to implement or legislation, but of course, having agreed with the convention, we would have then worked towards ensuring that our systems and our policies are in line with the convention. I therefore do not agree with your denial that says we could not have come to Parliament because we did not have systems and policies in place. It just doesn't add up. Maybe it's on that issue for now. But what can you say? In 2011, after having agreed on Basel Committee in 1992, in 2011 we agree on enforcement of this convention. How do we bring it into force? How do we? Well, you will tell us what are the penalties that are associated with enforcement. But even then, you still don't bring this matter before this august house called Parliament for ratification. It has been discussed for I don't know how many years, since from 1992, we are now at 2011, but even before then, in 2008, the ministers in Africa meet. Still, it's a policy, therefore we can't bring the ratification of this to Parliament. Because, of course, as you brought it to Parliament, it will ask you very, very strong questions. Are we ready? What methodology and means are we doing to adhere to the Basel Convention as a country? Maybe we'll even have fast-tracked your policy articulation on this matter. Had you brought this for ratification, we would have asked you, how ready are you to implement? How ready are we as a country to ensure that the illegal transportation of waste indeed is cessed in South Africa? What instruments do we have and what policy formulation do we have? So I would still say, DG, you were sleeping on the job. Buyer, fall asleep. You were too asleep.
Just another follow-up. As it said, we may need to get back to this issue because we may end up taking more time. Because it's like we'll try to understand this convention. And it may not be possible in this short space of time. But I'm just thinking of one immediate thing, Chair, that obviously these big companies in the developed countries have got sister companies in developing their countries. And when you deal with it, you need to have to deal with a conspiracy that may happen, because those will tell them that we want to dump a bit, and this is the channel, this is the kind of way we are going to do it. So whether you have the condition, you have this, they will always want to exploit the system. Yes, they will want to find a way. So do we now have capacity? If we say now we have the capacity, we're building capacity systems and so, do we now have the capacity to can?
For 21 years.
Yes, to stop this. Because I think these big companies will not rest in their laurels simply because developing countries are building capacity. They will not do that. They will work out different ways and measures through which they will continue to exploit the particular systems. So it's a battle. It's not like it's a simple thing that you just say these are the legal instruments and so on will do this. They will be fighting that case. And I'm saying, well, they don't dump during the night. They do this dumping daylight. Now, we have got soldiers guarding our borders, we've got everybody, but they still go through. Yes, they still go through. Now I'm saying, can you with the change tell us now that as we ratify, allow the country to ratify and domesticate this one thing, we now have got capacity. Just to, as you were saying, there's waste and non-waste and all that semantics and so on. But in the main, they're hiding behind that just to ensure that the dumping proceeds goes on until further notice without us having to act on it. And I'm just waiting for a day where a developed country dumps, or not even dumping, with a view of that being disposed, goes and do that in another developed country. Because the situation will always be exploiting the most vulnerable, which are the weak and poor states, and that happens to be Africa for now.
I saw you speak, TG. I saw the gentleman also want to try and attempt to get out of this difficult question. I keep on posing. TG?
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I think it is, would be very useful, and a couple of the members have alluded to it, to actually look at all of the chemicals conventions together. We have three, now four, with mercury being added, that is the typical conventions that deal with chemicals and hazardous waste. Some of them deal with ozone-depleting substances, which are what's referred to, which has waste associated with it, which are those waste that we export, for example. Then there are persistent organic pollutants, and that can, the one that is the most well known is DDT, which you know that we still use for malaria in the country, and there's huge issues around that and persistent organic pollutants. And then this transboundary movement of hazardous waste. And the other one that you've actually dealt with very least recently is the Minamata Convention on Mercury. Now, three of those four, they have actually, even because of the linkages between them, they combine the COP, or the Conference of the Parties, and it is actually on now in Geneva as we speak. What is important is that although we are a party to all of these conventions, that is in terms of the international arena. In terms of the responding to the national, we have banned domestically the unpermitted import and export of hazardous substances. So we are not dependent on the signing of the convention to enforce that. We can enforce it in terms of, and we should enforce it in terms of our own legislation. So I think the point that I think the team have not yet adequately communicated is why then the benefit of being involved in the international, this amendment to the convention that we are already a party to. And Chair, again, as I did with the Green Fund as well, I would really recommend that the team, and also basing on the presentation that Alf and I did right in the beginning of the year, where we told you that we have the three big policy gaps, policy and legislation gaps in the environment field. Oceans, we're busy working with the oceans policy, climate, and chemicals. So this fits very neatly into this big policy gap around chemicals. You've seen some of the role players in terms of the regulation and legislation of chemicals. There is the issues we start talking about electronic waste versus the chemicals that are inside the electronics, and then also in terms of some of the industries where it might actually be to our benefit if we could be extracting the high-value metals from these second-hand goods and reuse them in production. So there's a whole lot of a policy and a links discussion that we need to have. I agree with you that we did not give you adequate information in terms of explaining the 2011-2015 gap, 2008 gate, the Anthem gave us our marching orders, 2011 there was the follow-up in the discussion around that. So I think we need to explain between 2011 and 2015 what was that process. I know there was an assessment that we had to done in terms of the convention. The assessment part of it is that we cannot table before we can demonstrate our ability to ensure compliance and to report, because I think that is the very important point, is that with becoming a signatory to a specific amendment, you have to also comply with the, and I don't know what is the timing, reporting time frames for Basel, annually. So we have to annually report on our implementation of that. So we need to demonstrate our ability to do all of that before we table in front of Parliament to ratify, so that we can then adhere to all the requirements coming through that. And I think the team should say what were all of those steps that we have taken in that process in order to get to the point where we can say with certainty and with the necessary assurances that we can comply with the enforcement as well as the reporting requirements and reap the benefits. And I think if Albert could maybe just say why the international instrument is as important as the domestic instrument which we already have in place. Okay.
You want to call my manager or you want to come back later? I can assure you, I don't think that there will be a problem in principle of us agreeing with you ratifying. But as you will know, the question that we have asked, because in your presentation you should have said, we are now ready, here is scientific evidence. There's none. You just speak to the qualities of paper here, and you could have called me and we could have discussed that on the phone. And of course we don't agree, we don't disagree, but we are saying the reason why you did not do so. Because what you are saying here, you could have done that in 1994, by the way. 1994. This narrative could have still applied. What is different now? That will speak to your policy articulation, that will speak to your systems, that will speak to your enforcement of this convention internally in the country. And how it will also have case studies that you have mentioned, DTG, of how we have a South Africa test with some of the illegal shipments. But again, Ubaba Makubela raises a fundamental question here that says that, you know, we have got consumerism in the country. Who will illegally invite their USA or UK chapters to send waste to their factories? Those issues, what instruments we have in place? I don't think that we have the time now, because again, that was not covered in your presentation. You therefore need to come back so that we go into details. Those details do not say that in principle we are not agreeing with ratification. We agree. We will never agree. That we are a signatory at any rate. We are a signatory. So it's a done deal, you know. So from where we are seated, we don't have, in fact, we would not like to see at a political level, we would not like to see South Africa in particular, being a dumping ground of anybody. Anybody. We have asked another question. When you come back, unfortunately, it's you who report to us. We can't go to the other departments. What is the coordination between yourself and other departments on things that get done? Like clothing. You know, you go to the CBD of Johannesburg. I don't know what they call these places where they sell these old chere. And I don't know how they come into the country. These old chere. Hundreds and hundreds of them. And people go there, buy a jacket for 10 rand and whatnot. But where are these from? Who is in charge of monitoring that? Now, I'm not saying maybe there might be benefits for the poor, but I don't know whether these things don't come with diseases. Or what is the coordination between all of us on this matter? So that when you come back, we deal with everything that gets dumped, not only in your own area, because we are government, we are public reps. If you don't know, go and ask DTT, or DTI, sorry, DTI and whoever, on issues of cars, how do we know that our laws don't allow. But again, these very same cars, that's very unfortunate, that get shipped, second-hand or third-hand cars from Japan and everywhere, that get shipped to Botswana, are sold in Devon to the Botswanas, in our, what do you call, ports, or what do you call this place? That's where they come in. Why should it be a conduit for dumping in Africa? Even though we don't allow it in our own country, but we say, yes, we can make the necessary arrangements for these developed countries to dump in other countries in Africa. Is this in keeping with the Freedom Charter and the struggle that we fought over years? And the last part, there shall be peace and friendship. We will respect our neighbors, but these neighbors, it is not in their interest, but of course they like to have these korokoros and driving them around and polluting that entire space. So I'm saying, come back to us so that we have a broader discussion. Babu Shelen.
My question, Carlo, is in regard to the reasons to ratify, where in page 9 says, South Africa does, in line with the Berne Amendment, accept waste from SADC countries which do not have the necessary capacity to dispose. My question is, for how long will South Africa will be waiting for these countries to be capacitated to do that? Does that mean now, do we have anything in place to see whether they are willing to have capacity to deal with such a waste in their own countries? Or we are just saying, as long as they do not, whether they are willing to have capacity, but South Africa will allow all those waste disposals to come to South Africa. I'm just thinking on page 9, if maybe I'll get clarity on that.
Maybe that also comes with a linked question. What means of capacitation are we playing in this regard in South Africa in relation to this matter and those kinds of things?
Chair, thanks to the honourable member. I think that kind of capacity, as I alluded to earlier, is around technology and infrastructure to deal with it. So the kind of technology that deals with these very hazardous chemicals is very expensive. So to engineer, for instance, a hazardous landfill site costs hundreds of millions of rand. To safely dispose of some hazardous waste streams. So I think, I mean, the readiness of those countries, when will they be ready to deal with those waste streams? You know, I mean, it's a question, you know, that, you know, if you look at the economic state of a lot of countries in Africa, it's going to take a long time. And the ethical debate around that and the moral issue for us is that, are we going to say we won't accept it and let those chemicals and harmful waste streams affect those people in those countries, where they will definitely affect people there and cause very harmful effects? And I think the moral obligation then is that if we have the capacity to deal with that, then we have more than enough capacity to deal with that. I'm not sure what the our bilateral relations are with a set of countries, but I think there have been some MOUs in place around where we do, you know, have agreements, you know, for that. And so I remember, I think it's going to be an issue where some of these countries don't even have legislation yet. Some of them are battling with even basic and general waste issues. And when it comes to these very, very complex waste streams, I doubt it will be any time soon. So Chair, I think what you've painted, you know, the picture in terms of your suggestion, we welcome that. Our apologies this time that we have not given a very comprehensive and presentation in terms of this particular protocol and also the dimensions around what you were suggesting. The assessments we've done, the legal basis, the scientific basis, and we've done a lot of work here, but I think, as you said, it's going to take a lot of time. And the systems and policies, we'll also share with you our enforcement and compliance capacity to deal with that, and we'll give some more information around, I think, those case studies, and it should be a much better, I think, forum to interact with. We'll give you the full picture around this particular convention. Thanks. I'm not sure if you do an answer.
Chair, just in terms of, in addition to the Honourable Member's question about what is being done about the capacities, I think there's the issue around technology, but there's also in terms of the obligations on the convention itself. There are means of implementation, etc., which have part of it is include capacity development, which we, through the United Nations Environmental Programme, assist with. There's also the issue about volumes. If you think about a country like Swaziland or Lesotho, for example, it will not really be small quantities of highly hazardous waste, so you have to question whether it is really valuable to make a huge big technology investment in that. And then I think the third thing that is kind of in this regard is the SADC agreed environmental protocol, which is part of the SADC accord, where there is certain capacities that South Africa has and that we are leading that area of work in SADC. And around hazardous and chemical waste, as with many of the conservation matters, etc., we are in that role in SADC as well in the protocols.
I think we are in agreement that we will meet, and I think when we meet Chilena, sorry, Ms. Chilena, when we meet, because we still have an appointment with the department to deal with broadly waste issues. So when we deal with those waste issues, let's zoom into this as well, so that we deal with the entirety of the waste spectrum, and that will be helpful. But it basically says to us, it demonstrates our readiness as a country to deal with illegal dumping of chemical waste in our country, whatever systems we have in place, policies that we have put in place, working of course with our other sectors, including justice, how is the cooperation and coordination on this matter. So that is one area waste, but we accept, because it's you who appear before us, we can't call others. You can come with them if you want. The other issues that we have also raised, still amounting to dumping. You know, people can dump their underpants, their whatever here in our country. Can also dump their old cars here, even though they then don't get consumed in South Africa, but they are still dumped on our ports. Wow. So have that discussion wherever you're going to have it. We don't care. But when you come here, we will ask you. So be prepared. If there are other things that are dumped which we might discover when you are gone, make it your business to do your research as well. Because we might ask you about those. Because when we talk about dumping, we must be holistic. Very holistic, you know. With the advent of digital migration, I wonder if our policy is so watertight not to have these goods that will also come as set of boxes that might be not in the interest of our country from all over the place, your China, your India, and Korea, and everywhere else. It's difficult to be poor, you know. Very difficult to be poor. Because everybody thinks that you are a plaything. Even if they want to experiment with their very lousy cell phones, they experiment with you. It's very difficult to be poor. It's a sin, in fact. But having said that, colleagues, thank you very much. In the meantime, we don't have the difficulty with the ratification, as we have said. I think this is the indication I'm getting from members. We don't have the difficulty. Of course, we need more information on our readiness to implement. So we don't have any difficulties. And again, thank you very much for this presentation. This is the next presentation, Green Fund. And the Ushalentweni, just let's get to the meat of the story so that we don't beat around the bush. Because as you will know, I still have to finish my speech, and my study group wants that speech tomorrow. So all of us need to do that work. Did you?
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. We try to focus the question very much, of the presentation very much, on a continuation of the presentation that we made when we talked about the jobs and the expanded public works program. And therefore, to go into the detail around the typical questions that was asked. What are the natures? What are these three windows? What is the geographical spread? And all of the information that we can get, as well as what are the early indications of the review of the governance or institutional arrangements around the Green Fund? And so Romaro, the Chief Director responsible for sustainable development, will be presenting.
Thank you, Acting DG. Good day, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Well, the presentation will revolve around the number of projects that we have, as the Acting DG has already alluded to. And in front of you, you have 38 slides. I'll try to navigate as quickly as possible, but before I can even go to the slide, maybe a very brief context, which I did not include into the presentation, is around the fact that the Green Fund was established in 2012, funded to a tune of 1.1 billion, and it has, of course, we appointed the DBSA, Development Bank of Southern Africa, as the implementing agent with the management structure, which is MANCOM, the Green Fund Management Structure, whereby the chair is the DG Environment, and the people that participate in the management structure is Environmental Affairs, Treasury, and DBSA, mainly to oversee the implementation, facilitate approval of projects, and ensure that we effectively implement the Green Fund, just to lay that foundation. Well, in terms of the objective, Honorable Chair, I will try to navigate quickly the slides. I won't read slide by slide, otherwise you won't finish your speech for tomorrow, Chair. But in terms of the key objective of the fund was to promote innovative and high-impact green programs and projects, but most importantly, to reinforce the implementation of the climate change policy through green intervention and build what we call evidence base. And it is through the Green Fund that we are able to even fund the investment project, we are funding the research project, we are funding the capacity building projects. And the main objective for the fund was to serve as a catalytic financial mechanism to leverage resources from the private sector, the donor funding, to ensure that we don't only use the fiscal to implement this project, but to be able to attract other investors into the fund. Next slide. Well, in terms of the portfolio of projects thus far, we have a total of 53 projects that have been approved. We have 29 investment projects. These are actual projects that are being implemented on the ground. We have 16 research and policy development projects. Hence, we are now talking about evidence-based to ensure that the research will inform the interventions and it will also inform the policy development within the green economy space. We have 8 capacity building projects that have been approved. Well, in terms of the various categories, 18 projects are currently under implementation. Just to indicate that prior to the actual implementation, the project will go through a process of evaluation and it will be approved through the MANCOM after the due diligence, and there will be a contracting process where the implementing agent will enter into a contract with the applicants, where the lawyers from both sides will do the back and forth on the clauses and so forth. So 18 projects are currently under implementation, and we have 7 projects that are at various stages in terms of the contracting processes. We have 3 projects that have been withdrawn and 1 project that has been cancelled. In terms of the projection, it has been projected that approximately 14,150 jobs will be created through the fund. Hence, you could see that it's more about the spread, because we are talking about innovation, we are talking about research, we are talking in some cases about the high-tech development as far as the fund is concerned. And Treasury has just recently approved an allocation of 590 million for 2018-2019. The next slide, please. Well, this is in terms of the breakdown as far as the finances thus far. We have approved just over 1 billion projects,
And when we talk of commitments, we are talking about those projects that contracting and everything is in place. 532 million. And in terms of the actual cash flow, the disbursement of finances to the project developers, we have dispersed just over 383 million under project investment. And on the research and policy development, we have approved just around 36 million, and that money has been committed and dispersed to facilitate research development. And on the capacity building, we have approved 65 million, and commitment has been made to 65 million, and approximately 35 million has been dispersed. And this is mainly because the disbursement is done in phases. These are multi-year projects, so the disbursement is juxtaposed to the milestones that will be in the work plan of each and every project. Next slide. Well, again, in terms of these are financials in relation to the geographical spread, and I'm not going to go line by line, but in terms of the Eastern Cape, we have commitments of 28 million, and in terms of the disbursement per year, you could just see in terms of how the money has been dispersed each and every financial year on the basis of the project plan. But I think in terms of the total commitment, we are at around 607 million, taking into consideration that some of the projects that have been approved very recently are undergoing the contractual processes. Next slide. Well, the bread and butter issues, the actual projects. On the investment, I will just be touching few, because if I go slide by slide, Chair, I promise we'll take more time. But for KZN, we have a number of projects, and we have one in Etekwini municipality. The focus is around the reforestation, just to replicate and upscale some of the achievements of an ongoing reforestation project that are going within the municipality. And we are well aware that reforestation contributes significantly towards holding land degradation, and at some point can serve as a carbon sink. And a total of just more than 300,000 trees have been planted under that particular project. There's a project between Eastern Cape and the Western Cape, the Sun Park project. This is aimed at assisting community living adjacent to the national park to plan and implement developmental initiatives using conservation for rural development, which includes, among other things, the whole issue of the management of the wetlands. And it's through the Green Fund that this project has been taken to the next stage for application of the GEP Global Environment Facility under the window on biodiversity to ensure that they can be able to get funding. Hence, I've indicated that one of the main objectives is to leverage funding and ensure that we are able to link projects to available funding opportunities and mechanisms. The next slide. In the Western Cape, we have a number of projects. On this one, we have the thermal efficiency low-cost housing. And the focus is to ensure that we, of course, install a number of energy efficient interventions, which will include ceiling energy efficient lighting and solar water heaters in a low income household. This project took a lot of time to agree on the contracting, but all those hurdles have now been dealt with. It is now being, the contract has been signed, and they are only starting to do the actual implementation. And the city of Pune as well, we funded a study around energy efficiency in the municipal building. The main aim was to ensure that we facilitate the replacement of existing lighting equipment with energy efficient lighting technologies. Well, there are a number of recommendations that come out of that study, which the city of Tshwane is currently implementing, which include, among other things, the potential to facilitate energy saving ranging between 122 kilo megawatts and 17,729 kilowatts for the new and older building. Next slide.
In KZN, again, we have the Wildlife Conservation Trust project called Waste Renewals. And this project facilitates the collection of the recyclables, and over 4,400 waste renewals have been, of course, employed in the area, and they've collected and gathered just over 13,200 tons of recycling material in 4 years. And in terms of progress, I think the network thus far has spread over 118 communities with a job creation of approximately just over 6,656. And the project is coming towards its end phase. But I think in terms of the collection of the recyclable and contribution towards the avoidance in terms of emission reduction, you could see that there are some quite impressive figures, and the project as well facilitates school participation in terms of waste collection. Free State and Northwest, we have the project called Job in Waste for Youth, funded to a tune of just over 67 million, which aims at addressing youth unemployment by, of course, facilitating their participation into the collection and training in terms of waste management. But this project, I think, contributes again significantly in terms of the improving service delivery and addressing unemployment. Well, in terms of progress in those two provinces, I mean, one of the objectives was to ensure that 10,000 bins are planned and procured and placed in each and every province. And in terms of the progress thus far, Northwest has met the target. It's only Free State that is lagging behind a bit. But a total of 568 individuals have participated in both accredited and non-accredited training. So that's why it has a huge element of capacity building. And of course, there's a whole element of infrastructure-related contribution by ensuring that we facilitate the building of ablution facilities. These are dry sanitation through the EnviroLoose. And next slide, please. In Gauteng, we have two projects. One is the Smart Cities for the Green Economy. This project has a component of research, which is aimed at developing a mechanism that will assist the municipalities to can effectively manage the usage of electricity, and is done through the CSIR, and good progress has been made. They've developed a component, they've developed the tools, and they of course are undergoing the demonstration, the testing of the tools. And this tool, if it is successful, it will help the municipalities. They can plug in the households and be able to tell who's using more electricity than the other. And through that particular device, they can be able to upfront switch off your geyser or switch off your light from the municipal building. So it's quite a very innovative project that has been researched and developed by the CSIR. We have the Betona in Quebec. This is a new rust prevention process that uses a clean production energy efficiency technology that will reduce the environmental impacts and resource consumption by eliminating pollution at source in iron and steel industries. And this particular chemical is being tested, I think it's in the Northern Cape mining area, where they are trying to facilitate the testing and see if in essence this particular chemical could really do as what has been planned to do. Next slide. Stunning the Wild in KZN is more about land use management model designed to establish community greening conservation, and this is a project that came out of the land claim, where the communities decided not to sell the land. After winning the land claim, they decided to put the land under conservation. And some of the progress made there is around the whole issue of the game farming, 1,200 animal species have been introduced. The area has been fenced, and 79 permanent and semi-permanent green jobs have been created. So it is largely facilitating the whole issue of ecotourism to ensure that it can be self-sustaining and it can be replicated in other areas. We as well have a project called Hammersdale Waste Beneficiation Center, where communities collect and recycle some of the recyclable, and through this project there has been establishment of a waste beneficiation hub training facility where a number of beneficiaries have been trained in the area. The next slide. Well, we have the organic waste treatment. I think I can just pass that one as well. And in Limpopo and Mpumalanga, we have the Operation Oxpack. This is a bad business that is facing the threat, but the main objective of the project was to capture it and make sure that it can be put in a place of safety and we can say, you can secure those particular species for the future. Next slide, thanks. We have the Mutifuti project in KZN, which largely focuses on the cultivation and harvesting of the traditional medicinal plants. And I think thus far the project has made some great strides in terms of the number of trees that have been planted, 143,000. And it has surpassed the target of 120,000. But most importantly, they are bringing in other partners, which include Dischem and Alpha Pharmacy, so that we can start selling those medicinal plants. And the project is located in the deep rural community of KZN. Approximately 300 members of the KZN are benefiting from the project. There is also a Keston Belt in KZN. This is an energy efficiency South African made belt, which is aimed at ensuring that within the mining sector, this belt can be utilized to convey materials in a manner that is energy efficient. The belt has been developed, and two groups are currently working on the testing of the belt and is deployed in the Northern Cape, primarily to service the iron ore mines, just to test this conveyor belt. I think the critical element there is this is one of the energy efficiency belts in comparison to the current belts that are being used. Next slide. The ISHEC project, which will provide solar power to citizens in an informal settlement. And this initiative, I think, has started quite very well with an approximate installation of 7,000 installations have been done in the communities. Further 40 people currently are on the waiting list. Well, the project basically is to ensure that they provide those solar electricity to informal settlement. It's not in Gauteng. Apologies for that. It's in Stellenbosch, Western Cape. The Bema Bamboo in KZN to provide, of course, the supply of biomass as feedstock. And thus far, we managed to plant a total of 400,000 shoots that have been propagated, of which 22,317 shoots were planted on a 9.8 hectare of land in KZN. It's mainly to supply biomass, which can be co-heated with coal to reduce the carbon emissions. The next slide. We have an aquaculture project in the Eastern Cape, and I think the project is in early stage on the implementation of the infrastructure. Currently, they are working on the development of the infrastructure, but in essence, the project aimed at facilitating the aquaculture farming. Shepherding back biodiversity. The project focuses largely on the mainstreaming of the entire biodiversity conservation through controlled land uses in the productive agricultural landscape. And this is one of the projects that took forever DG as well to sign on. But it seems that currently the terms and the conditions have been met by the project developer, and the first disbursement will be made quite very soon. The next slide. Reach renewable. The aim is to procure a linear concentration collector system to produce the heated water for use in its energy industry. This is an application by a company that wants to mainly use the solar water, the solar processes to harvest the energy that they can use through their production. This project is still going, it's still under negotiation in terms of the contracting, and it's taking far too long as well, and I could understand that one of the sticky issues there, because this is a loan, it's around the whole issue of the structure of the loan as well, in terms of how long they have to repay and what is the interest rate that has to be charged as far as that is concerned as well. We have the giant flag. This is one of the flags that has some tourism elements, with a proposal of 66 hectares of African flag, made up of 2.5 million water-wise plants. So you will see a South African flag made of plant species on the ground. It has some tourism elements. We, of course, as part of the condition, we wanted them to go and get some co-financing mechanism, and it seems that the present developer has not agreed to the terms. He wanted a full amount to just fund the entire project. Ocean-wise, multiple renewable technology, the focus was to utilize all food waste, fish waste, in processing waste in a biodigester, which will produce methane for combined heat and power units. Well, it seems as well one of these projects where the project developer did not agree on the terms of the conditions, and I think some of the terms were largely around the co-financing mechanism, because when these projects are submitted, the proponent will indicate how much investment will come along as well to the proposal. So when we do now the actual contracting, you realize that in essence there is a challenge in terms of meeting that particular condition for co-financing. These are the newly approved projects which were approved in the previous MANCOM of March. The first one is around the Lukhanyiso in the Free State. The focus there is to develop an anaerobic digester and production of a compressed natural gas from pigs and chicken farms, manure, and of course. And the project is currently undergoing contracting. It's recently being approved. We have another one in Gauteng, Wilco Fields Hybrid Biogas Project, which is as well undergoing contracting. The next slide. In the Northern Cape as well, we have Utility of the Future. It's a project that focuses largely around the advanced energy storage and energy management and the microgrid technology, which has been recently approved. And the currently working on the contracting and dealing with the whole issue of the conditions. And if you may have a look, I mean, the three key main projects were in the energy sector. This is one of the areas where the Green Fund felt that it would be important to make a contribution in that space. We have sustainable, affordable housing, working with the NetBank to catalyze the development of local sustainable affordable housing markets, which of course taking into consideration the green element. And the project as well is currently undergoing contracting. This is one of the projects that has been cancelled, the Durban Westville, the Durban University of Technology project. The focus was around the supply of potable water in a remote area with the aim of purifying and harvesting rainwater. And I think one of the reasons why the project was cancelled was due to the main player and the main component to the project being withdrawn. This is one of the projects that I've reported last time, that one of the main members of the team withdrew, and otherwise should we have continued with the project, we're going to have challenges with the intellectual property rights issues. Reliance Composting in the Western Cape, the focus was around the integrated waste management, composting of green waste from the coastal town. And I think this is one of the projects that was withdrawn by the project developer. Next slide, please. The next slide. Well, I think those, honorable members, were the investment projects with their own dynamics as a project. And now we are moving towards the research policy initiative project. We thus far have approved 16 research and policy development initiatives, which have been approved to the value of just over 36 million. And all these projects are aiming at one, influencing our intervention within the green economy space. Hence, we are talking about the whole issue of science policy interface to inform as well our policy direction. We need to have, of course, the research outputs that could be evidence-based to inform where we are headed. But in terms of the expected date of completion is December 2015, effectively from December 2015 to December 2015. So there will be some that will start winding down from September, and by December 2015 we'll have the full research output, which we can then share and see what are the observations, what are the trajectory, what are the potential areas that we can then move into. I'm not sure, Chair, if I have to go slide by slide on the research, but just to indicate that these are the research topics. The first one is investing in ecological infrastructure to enhance water security in the Umgeni River catchment. As you are well aware, we are a water-scarce country. And the second one is around the whole issue of enhancing ecological infrastructure in the Umgeni catchment through collective private sector action, the role of private finance and markets. The third one focuses largely around the whole issue of sustainable farming as a viable option for enhanced food and nutrition security. And Chair, you were talking about the whole issue of addressing poverty. The fourth one focuses around the proposal to conduct a research study on the design of policy framework and financial instrument to enhance investment in the green economy in South Africa. I think one of the main objectives of the Green Fund is to be catalytical, facilitate investment in the green economy, so the research output will as well help in terms of the various models and approaches that we can undertake to unlock investment into the green economy space. This fifth one is around research development on the novel direct-driven permanent magnet generator of the renewable energy. I'm not sure whether, Chair, I should read.
I don't think so.
But we have 15 of them.
We will read them out ourselves.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm mindful of your time as well, Chair. Could you go to the next slide, next slide, next slide? The capacity building project, We have 8 capacity building projects which were approved to a value of 66 million. And in terms of the time frame, they vary from 1 to 3 years. Can you go next slide? Back. The first one focuses around the green economy skills and small medium enterprises development. And the main objective here is to develop and support entrepreneurs for the green economy so that we can achieve higher rate of startup survival and growth through incubation, semi-virtual incubation, and virtual incubation process. So this is in essence to support the development of small and medium enterprises. We have the second one which focuses largely around the Renewable Energy Center of Excellence, which of course facilitates training. Of approximately 918 people have been trained thus far. The second slide. We have the third one around the establishment of environmental assessment practitioners, Association of South Africa. The main objective there is to establish and sustain an early operation of the Environmental Assessment Practitioners Association of South Africa. And the association intends to develop and register competent and reputable environmental assessment practitioners. I think one of the things that we are talking about is when you protect the environment, you of course want to have the reputable EIA expertise to ensure that you have some objective reporting coming through when you do your assessment and decision making. The fourth one is around the Climate Innovation Center program, which as well supports largely innovation, entrepreneur, and small and medium enterprises. We have the academic one around the Green Economy Postdoctoral Fellowship, and the main focus was to mainstream green economy into formal training, particularly at the tertiary institution as well as there's that postdoctoral fellowship support. The next slide. We have green jobs training programs for South Africa, which we are working with the International Training Center, International Labour Organization, to facilitate training of policymakers within the green economy space. That's why we have conducted 2 training, and we, of course, facilitated the training of both the national policymakers, the provincial, and of course the local municipalities through this training. We have the building climate change capacity for labor program. This is to ensure that our labor movement as well are on board in terms of the whole issue of the implementation of climate change. And there's the funding there to ensure that there's capacity building to constitute and affiliate. Next slide. The last capacity building initiative, Chair, is around the whole issue of building system capacity for green skills development in South Africa. And this program aims at introducing a system-wide institutional capacity initiative to ensure that through our national skills development system, we are able to mainstream the whole element of the green economy. The next slide. Well, Chair, these are some of the economic impacts. These are some of the impacts that are envisaged from the Green Fund, both the economic impacts by ensuring that we facilitate private sector participation, ensure that there are some revenue streams. And in terms of the economic impact, thus far we did not see much inflow to the program itself, to the fund itself. However, there are a number of projects where there is co-funding mechanisms, and we have of course leveraged to a value of approximately 40 million through project co-financing mechanisms. But what we really want in future is to see money flowing into the kitty itself, into the fund itself, which could be invested into the priorities that we would then design. On the social, of course, the focus is around job creation. Over 8,000 jobs have been created thus far. empowerment, skills transfer, capacity development. And we, of course, have seen under capacity building there are a number of training that has been conducted, and there are some in-job training that have been conducted within the on the project, which as well yield some of the positive capacity building results. On the environment, I think quite very clearly, we have seen the good outcome around waste collection. We have seen outcomes around the whole issue of conservation of land. And of course, we have seen the reduction in terms of energy consumption by putting in some of the energy efficiency equipment. And of course, the diversion of waste from the landfill. Those are some of the impact share that we measure the Green Fund against. And I think that should be the last slide. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, colleagues. Any takers? Namnyambe, Kekana, oh, Malule. Oh, that for sure will be the last one.
Chairperson, my first question is on page 3. In terms of the geographical spread, I just want to check Northern Cape, there is commitment, but there is nothing that has been done in terms of the commitment. The other question, Chairperson, is on page 4. I just want to check, Chairperson, what are the main causes that made Preset not to meet the target as indicated today on page 4. The last one, Chairperson, is on page 16. As much as we appreciate in terms of the capacity building whereby 918 people were trained, for interest sake, Chairperson, I just want to know how many youth were trained, how many women, and how many disabled were trained.
More on the project being who can I am really far from the whole. So the corner of the Sumara Lemai, Chile game, Kadim Mayani, they didn't game. The car is Sumara Lahore, who's the Hanna did it chemically, say the Kaluka, more Munahania Road. Who can never prove for the fact? Ke sa lete instruction gore le thulaganyo ya go nna dilo tse pedi gore ge le ka tsaya dinonyane tse la di tsadisa la di ntsifatsa gore re seke ra iphitlhelela dinyeletse ka gore di mo seteng di mo di-provinceng tse pedi. Ke buisiwa sekolo thata ka gore mo North West ga di se dikeletse mare ga di ka tsadisiwa jangka tse dintsi di tla kgona go supply-iwa mo di-provinceng tse dingwe di kgona go ja digofa tse di mo diphologolong tsa rona. Ke a leboga.
Thank you so much. I would like to thank the department for the initiative taken in relation to the Ox Pickup project. Now, we're not giving instructions, but we're just recommending that more so that we do have this project. It's user-friendly and it saves costs. So I want to find out from the department if it's possible that you can have the breeding arrangement for this bay so that they can also be used and be extended to the other provinces. At the moment, we don't have them in the Northwest Province, but we'd greatly appreciate if this can be rolled out to different provinces. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. I just want clarity on page 4, slide number 8. Just to check the relationship between the Department of Water and Sanitation and the Department of Environment in terms of this EnviroLoos. I'm asking this chair because we have this project in our constituents, but the challenge is that people are not skilled about this EnviroLoos. It is an important project because we have a challenge of our underground water. It's on top. Then we can't use this flushing toilet. That one was good for us because you just have to take out the manure inside the toilet. It will be dry like a sweat. But people didn't have the skills of using those toilets. They pour water inside and it doesn't need water, it needs chemicals. So I want to check with the department the relationship between environment and water and sanitation in terms of addressing the challenges, because now it's not hygienic to our people because now are full, and I don't want to talk about the smell that we have. Thank you, sir.
No,
thank you very much, Chairperson, and my apologies for arriving late because of multitasking. The growing organization called the EFF.
Just get to your arguments. Leave the growing, but I'm not sure about that one. That.
Thanks, Chairperson. Mine is a very simple question. On COSATU and its affiliate, why specifically capacity building on climate change on COSATU and its athletes? What's happening with other labor federations, and why specifically COSATU and its athletes? Thank you.
I think I was going to raise the same question. I would be more comfortable.
I saw it coming.
I would be more comfortable if he used the way to organize labor. Then it would make sense. Not to be specific, limited to COSATU and affiliates.
Okay. Whip.
Just three questions. The first, I have seen mention of the approximate number of jobs that will be created out of all these projects. Projects, by their very nature, it means they come and go, they must be concluded at a particular point. Do we by any chance have jobs that will be permanent, deriving from these projects, either to try and pursue such projects once they are in place and so on, or they come and go? The other, I've seen over the years, there doesn't seem to be any commitment in Limpopo as one province, and so on. I might have missed your explanation if you did, but I just want you to once more clarify us what's happening in that very province, or they may need assistance wherein you must just focus and help them to get some project in place or something like that. Lastly, sir, I don't want to assume that I've got some understanding or not. We often talk of the green economy as well. Does this green fund contribute in some way to the green economy? Because I don't think it should be equal to the green economy in entirety. But what is the difference in that particular regard so that we know that as part of this, it's not something separate, or is it completely separate from the green economy that we talk about? Or what is, just clarify that a little bit to me. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, let's thank you, because all that you have done, you have given us projects in this instance. Overload of projects. And I think from a policy perspective, you are right. The Green Fund creates a space for catalytic financing, which then should and must include the private sector. At this point in time, the financing of all these projects, without exception, is from the public sector. Therefore, the question of sustainability and dependability of the project broadly in the green economy business space, as understood by your NGOs in that space, as understood by business in this space, but we are also, at a broader level, we are also dealing with adaptation measures to climate change. And mitigation measures. One would have thought of those as well. Now, I don't, of course, there are some projects that speak to that belief. Well and good. But in the sectors of the economies that will be threatened, or that are threatened in fact, by climate change, what are the projects of a scientific nature that speaks to adaptation technologies? Now, I'm raising this broadly because if you have a green fund that is everything, and without a particular focus on the problem of now and the future, the difficulty is that we will not be able to have technologies that we need now and in the next 50 years, or starting now going towards 2050, to deal with climate change difficulties that will be inherent very soon. We have also heard that in the Antarctica, ice has started to smelt them. But we have also, I don't know whether working with even the our science department and the various instruments that are there, whether we could not also as a country be focusing ourselves on technologies that speak to climate change broadly. The technologies that speak to, you know, our 50-year scenario, the up, the plateau, and the decrease in greenhouse gas emissions. Because you will need technologies. I don't get that sense, politically speaking, that we are focused on finding technologies that will assist us now, but technologies that, you know, we are busy speaking to industry now on carbon budgets. The question that will arise is, indeed, we would like to continue to grow the GDP of our country through energy, but we should not be doing things as business as usual. President says that we must decrease our carbon print by what, 32% between now and 2020, and 44% 2020-2025. Through the Green Fund, how do we, in an innovative way, speak to that, to technologies of adaptation, to the technologies of mitigation in the resources? I don't you know, it's nice to see packages of programs, but until these programs, indeed, we might not have made a presentation that speaks eloquently to what I'm raising. My view is that let's speak to these difficult issues. When we speak to the green economy, we are speaking to this transition from a high carbon economy, by the way, to a low carbon economy. That's what we're speaking to. And it will need some serious adaptation and mitigation measures from ourselves. In fact, even the International Green Fund is supposed to assist us in this regard, which, of course, has not been capitalized. At the moment, I'm told it's lying with, what, $10 million. It's supposed to be having 100 billion, I'm told. Very far from 100 billion, particularly to service us who are vulnerable to the climate change. Even ours, seems to be not focused to that area of it. I'm not saying that I understand your Green Fund well now, but I'm just speaking as a new person in this area, that we have serious difficulties even in our own strategy. We say the core of our strategic framework is to transition to a low-carbon, resilient economy. But how are we, through this Green Fund, giving evidence towards that? So I'll just leave it at that for now. And how do we bring in this private sector that we are negotiating with now on decreasing our carbon footprint? How do we bring them in on technologies that will make them continue to be in business? So that this co-financing, we don't co-finance little things everywhere else that do not have a bigger impact on the climate change that we are faced with today, and that will be catastrophic. In fact, who are these people? Earthquakes, something. F life scientists who said that the consequences, if this matter is not dealt with, will be equivalent to 10,000 airplanes falling from the sky every day. That's what they said. That is disastrous, monstrous. But how are we, through this Green Fund, responding to this eventuality? I'm not getting that sense. You realize that I'm not speaking to the project, but I'm speaking to the cumulative effect of all these projects to this threat to our future. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I will start to just try and set the context, so I will almost start with the last question that you've asked before we get to the specific project. Chair, you would recall that when we were here last, when we talked about it, we said that one of our problems is that after 3 years, we have to now review why have we not attracted investment in the fund as opposed to co-financing of projects. Because we have achieved co-financing of projects. The figures that you see there is the part that the Green Fund has paid. But many of these projects have been co-funded by either the IDC, the Cleaner Technology Fund, GEF, or from own contribution in equity and in kind, especially when it is a loan agreement. We have not succeeded in attracting any investment into the fund itself. And that is addressing both your issue about sustainability, because the treasury contribution or the fiscus contribution was supposed to be the start-up, attracting funds either through repayment, etc., and we're not succeeding. So our current review is trying to establish why is there not investment into the fund. Has it to do with the fact that it is kind of considered as a grant mechanism, and or is it as a result of how the governance is working? And that work is not concluded yet in terms of why, because we had promises. We had promises from the Swiss bank, we had promises from DSW, from the Germans. There was a whole lot of institutions or funding institutions that have interest, that have demonstrated an interest that have not realized. So we're trying to establish why have it not realized. The second part, and this will straddle a bit between the question that you asked and what the WIP asked, in terms of the place of this fund in terms of the bigger funding model. And Jay, you've heard about a whole lot of things, and we need to still map how everything comes together. We have just in the country, we have the Cleaner Technology Fund, which is specifically around that technology around mitigation, which they are supposed to be funding. We have in DTI, there's a whole lot of separate funding. We have the Green Fund. We then also have, in terms of the global funding, we have two sets of climate-specific funding. One is the Adaptation Fund, for which Sandy is the implementing agent, and the other one is the Green Climate Fund, which, as you know, has not been capitalized, etc. Then there is the Global Environmental Facility that we were talking about. So there's all of these pots of money, all of them focusing on climate, adaptation and mitigation in different forms, but there are also gaps. And what we try to do with the Green Fund, and specifically because Treasury has been involved so heavily in terms of how it is being structured, is to address the gaps in terms of the Green Fund for that. So what is it that Treasury is not giving us funding through environmental programs, and a lot of the adaptation stuff is actually an environmental program. So if you look at the work that Dr. Preston presented here last time, that is the allocation, but the problem is that it doesn't attract private sector funding. It is public funding only. In order to do these things, we have in the first 3 years of the Green Fund focus on three windows. The first window is around energy, and it has got very much a mitigation view. So we're talking about renewable energy, low carbon energy, etc., pollution energy, etc. The second window was around natural resource management, and this is where you see a lot of the sustainable agriculture practices, etc., that we talked about here, as well as the conservation projects. And they have more of an adaptation focus, and it's a sustainable focus. And the last one is a mixture between the two, because it's a local government focus. And there you have energy, and you have water, and you have a mixture of projects. Part of our criteria on a project level for both the research and the investment projects that Flo presented is this whole issue around sustainability going forward and scalability. So we've mostly done pilot projects. There's very few projects that we can say is at scale, and it was to demonstrate scalability or multiplication potential of that specific project that we had. And that is why this assessment after 3 years of it is to say which of these projects have actually achieved it. Which of them was very nice as a project, but it doesn't really have that demonstration. Which of them are technology driven, and which of them are jobs and employment driven? Because some of them, maybe you would be absolutely correct, it is only jobs during construction, but others like farming the wild is a sustainability job creation, forever. So you will have permanent jobs there, which will over time would need to be funded through the operations of that business, and others is just a short term in terms of the period of this. The bamboo biomass project is also one of those that is like a sustainable issue, because there will be continuous harvesting of the biomass. Chair, and I think that thing again fits in to how we're talking about the green economy overall. And I think this is again something that we need to bring to you. You would recall the Minister continuously talking about the pillars of the green economy strategy, and in there we have 8 pillars. So NRM and renewable energy is but 2 of those pillars of the green economy strategy of the country, and the Green Fund is only a partial funding. 1.1 billion is the fund if we don't grow it. So it is really not the key for unlocking the green economy. It's just a small part of facilitating, demonstrating, and the big thing is if we don't address this failure of attracting funds to the fund itself, then we would not be able to grow it from this, what was supposed to be a seed, into a growing big sustainable fund. On the different projects, I will ask Chloe to respond to them. I do want to, however, because I have just a little bit of personal knowledge of this, talk a little bit about the Oxbeckers. One of the things that we have found about the Oxbeckers, and this link back to Mark's presentation, is Oxbeckers have mostly gone extinct or on the danger of being extinct as a result of the use of dipping our livestock to protect them from ticks, mostly. And then those Oxbeckers would die of that very same poison that was intended to kill the ticks. In places where we have phased out some of these pesticides through the convention that we didn't talk about today, the Rotterdam Convention, if I'm correct, we see that Oxbeckers are busy establishing themselves again. And we have them on normal farms again appearing, specifically in Limpopo and Mpumalanga. So in terms of this project, which is now in Limpopo and Mpumalanga, it is to benefit from this breeding hubs and spread them. So the intention has been to spread to the other provinces where they would naturally occur. Places like the Western Cape, they will not survive because it's not a temperature in which Oxbeckers would naturally occur in. So it's Northwest Limpopo and Mpumalanga is the natural distribution of these really very amazing little birds. So this is in effect a breeding program, and from where it needs to spread, and it was part of our conditions that it needs to spread as far as possible, and that is why we've also involved Sandparks in that project, because Sandparks is the originator of these original breeding species. I will also want to protect Chloe from responding to the Kusatu question. Members must remember that the Green Fund is on application. So the Green Fund we advertised in the newspaper as the implementing agent, DPSA, put a application in the newspaper and call for proposals for capacity development and giving the windows in which the capacity development must be. Kusatu applied. And they applied for a very specific project, which was to do that. In the consideration of Mancom of that application, we have agreed and we have very clearly indicated that there is not a sole use right on the concept of the training, so the training material to be developed would need to be available to labor generally. It's not the property of Kusasa and its affiliates, but they have succeeded in their application for us to avail funding for them to develop that capacity. If any other federation or organized labor would put in an application in a future window, it would be considered on the same merits. So it was purely, nobody is barred from applying to the Green Fund, and every application is considered on its merits. We do not make allocations that is outside of an application. It is not within the mandate of the Green Fund to allocate funding where there is no application. It's not the model in which it work. Thank you, Chair. Then I will ask Chloe to just respond to the other questions around the commitment. What does it mean? Why is there not being disbursement? Generally, it has to do with where we are with contracting. Disbursement happens once implementation happens. So commitment means we've said yes, we've allocated the money to you, but only when there is milestones reached through implementation can there be disbursement. What was the cause for the delays in the Free State? And I think you've got all of the other questions as well. The water and sanitation question as well, which link actually more to our NRM work than this work, but we will talk about that.
Thanks, DG, and thanks, Honourable Members, for the question. I think truly the question, of course, that we deliberated quite extensively when making that decision to say would they really want the material to be utilized abroad, across board. But as DG has already indicated, we deal with an application based on its merit. So it was an application by Kosatu. On the green economy versus green fund, green economy is a concept which aims at facilitating resource efficiency, low carbon trajectory. Green fund is a mechanism that helps us to achieve that which we want to achieve within the green economy concept, which is green resource efficiency and low carbon trajectory. So the green economy is a broader concept, something that we work towards achieving, whereas the green fund is the mechanism, the nuts and bolts and the tools that help us to, one of the tools that help us to achieve that. On the question around Limpopo, no commitment. I mean, I had a discussion with the team as we were developing the presentation. The obstacle is between Limpopo and Mpumalanga. So if we were going to put a figure on Limpopo, it was just going to affect the adjustment. It was going to be 50%. But I thought I would explain this to say they are sharing the projects between Limpopo and Mpumalanga. Hence, on Limpopo, we did not make financial allocation. But if we are to make a financial allocation, it means we have to spread it into two. But nevertheless, here we are talking about one project developer that is focusing in the two provinces. So we focus on a project. Yeah. On the issue of the EnviroLoom, we understand that when you put the EnviroLoom together, you need to facilitate some capacity and training to ensure that foreign substances are not used in those toilets, because or water. Once you bring the foreign substance, that's just stolen. It depends. When you put it in schools, we experience those challenges where, you know, students will put stones, some will put water and so forth. Once you put those, then the smell will be an issue. But through the environment program, in collaboration with our engagement with DOAR, we did a number of Department of Water and Sanitation. We did a number of projects, and the recent projects that were conducted was in Limpopo to facilitate the building of this EnviroLoom, and we continuously work with our environment programs to monitor their implementation. This is mainly a dry sanitation, and if you follow the procedures, you are not going to have the smell, but once you mix with water and so forth,
the waste cannot dry, and then we will have a problem with the smell. On the issues of the jobs, permanent and some attached to the timeline of the program, I think Acting DG has responded to us. That there are projects that have established a sustainable business model that will continue post the allocated funding. And on those projects, such as the KZN1, you are still going to have the permanent job ongoing. But there are those projects, unfortunately, which when the project ends, already it will have an implication on the jobs. Because we find that if the project is a grant, it does not necessarily have the sustainability model. And such project, when it ends, the unfortunate reality is it will impact on the jobs. Hence the debate that we are having around the whole issue of the sustainability of the green funds, looking at the reconfiguration of the models. I mean, it's the first year was mainly around the establishment of the funds. 2018, that's where you now have the actual implementation in 2014. So we can, of course, draw from the lesson and start working. Currently, we are working on what will be the best model that could assist in terms of the sustainability, the attraction of leveraging, and the attraction of donor and private sector funding into the fund. And on that note, we did not disaggregate as yet the jobs in terms of the youth and training in terms of the youth, the disability, and so on. We are going to commission a full monitoring and evaluation of the actual projects within the Green Fund. And that monitoring and evaluation would be able to do an actual disaggregation in terms of the youth, the disability, the women, and so forth. But on some projects already, as they report, you can clearly see, such as the Motifut, that most people employed there are women. And on other projects, such as the Job Youth in Waste, most people that are employed there are youth. But I think we still have to undertake that work, which we have agreed in the previous MANCOM that we need to undertake a full monitoring and independent, in essence, monitoring and evaluation of the project. On the Free State one, the issue there has been delay around the procurement processes, which there has been some interventions, and we are hopeful that it will achieve the target, because it was around procuring the targeted waste bin, which is 10,000 per province. On the Northern Cape, I think DG, you responded on that. This is a recently approved project, hence there is no disbursement. Once everything else is done and the project is on the ground, there will be some disbursement to facilitate implementation. But at this stage, the project has been approved, the contracting has been undertaken, and once that is done, there will be disbursement. Hence, you can see only the figure, but there is no disbursement.
I think I've tried to cover all the questions.
If I maybe just add on the eco loop, the sanitation responsibility is with water and sanitation. But the honourable member would know that we have this environmental infrastructure program as part of the environmental programs that we presented last time. So the request is specifically look at the deployment of EnviroLoos in a specific area, together with the capacity building that goes with the using of it, can be directed to Dr. Preston, and he would be able to assist with in that specific area. But the overall provision of sanitation is the responsibility of water and sanitation. They do fully, especially in rural areas, support EnviroLoos. Obviously, with knowing urban areas, we need the waterborne sanitation in order for our waterworks, etc., to work. But in rural areas, it is within full support of the Department of Water and Sanitation.
Okay.
Yeah, I just follow up with the more look at them for. Ke tshoga gore le bua ka matselo a mabedi Mpumalanga le Limpopo, and Mpumalanga e gaufi le Mozambique, Limpopo e gaufi le Zimbabwe. So dinonyane ke dilo tse di fofang, a ga di ka ke di a tshelelela kwa ka koo go na le gore ke ba re di khipile ka kwa di le mo kampeng. Ke a leboga.
Thank you so much, Chair. My question is based on the feasibility studies relating to the birds themselves, because the oxpeckers might be migratory birds, and we invest a lot of money in breeding them. Are we not going to find ourselves in a situation where we have bred these birds, but they migrate to, say, for instance, in Mozambique, those that are in Mpumalanga, and those that are in Limpopo would be migrating to Zimbabwe? Are we not going to work at a loss? Has there been homework done before?
Yeah, I think, you know, the oxpeckers are not long-range migratory birds. So in terms of the areas where this work is done, we have the work that has been done is actually demonstrating that they are locally multiplication. So it is spreading geographically, but not rapidly, because they are not long distance migratory birds like our birds of prey and some of our seabirds that go very far. So obviously they would go over the river, etc. But it is truly a sustainable project in the long term. And you can spread it.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to point to slide number 19. One of the projects that they wanted to do was to focus to supply potable water in the remote rural areas. According to the briefing, is that one of the stakeholders withdrew. Now they have canceled that novel idea. Are they considering to approach any tertiary institution to help in this regard? Because I remember last year the provincial government even declared certain areas in case of energy drought, affected areas. So this is a very good move, and it would be very good to continue with this idea to bring potable water to the rural communities. Thank you, Chair.
And then maybe on the same issue that Bongane is asking, isn't it the approval of the project was because of its weight? And of course then the people who applied then fought among themselves. Can we resuscitate? That is the question. Because it is in the interest of our people. If there is a mechanism through which we can capture and store water that we don't know of, and some people have these good ideas and we're prepared to fund them, can't we, so that we don't just stay out. We know who are the people who have the ownership of the, what do you call this thing? Intellectual property. Can't we approach them ourselves so that, well, I don't know with whom they will then, of course we can then find others with whom they can come together, because I think it's in the interest of the country. We have got serious difficulties on water, particularly in our rural parts of our country. If there is a mechanism, We can't just say, oh, no, they did not agree on terms, then we just leave it at that. I, okay, Babu, wait.
Page 20, there's also a project that failed, that was withdrawn in fact, and that's a project that was somewhat initiated by CSIR.
I think you must shed more light on it as to why that project couldn't be continued with. It is in Gauteng, it was supposed to increase the biogas production potential for the generation of electricity. And I'm just wondering if a project facing Gauteng and on the basis of which the SIR was supposed to have been involved, then it tells a lot. I'm interested, so clear, to understand why it can't as well be resuscitated.
One more last thing, Che. I think I'm very worried when the private sector does get involved in this new technology in making sure that we have a greener country. I would like to know what is the disembark in the investment from the private sector. Is legislation, I think they might put this onto the table so that we as legislators will ensure that we deliberate on this issue and make legislation available. Thank you, Chair.
Well, then let me start with that one so that they don't come to it again. They are reviewing everything of the Green Fund now so that they themselves come to some understanding of why they are failing to attract investment. So it might be the governance model, it might be many issues. At this point in time, they don't know. Can we then allow them to conclude the overview? Obviously, they will then have to come back to us so that they do exactly what you're saying, Puman. Did you?
Thank you, Chair. Before I ask Claude to respond to the two specific projects, one of the general things that we have in the Green Fund is that we want to ensure that if governments solely fund something, a technology development, a research project, etc., that the IP, the intellectual property, afterwards belong to the people of South Africa. Between us and Treasury, the Department and Treasury has been very, very strong on this. We cannot, with the money of the taxpayers, ultimately create a dependency on a private party with an IP which we will then perpetually be dependent on, for example, for potable water. So there is an issue of principle in terms of the IP specifically. And for us, although we still consider it, and that is why we support research projects that can come up with a different IP that can have the same result, but we have that IP then belonging to the people of South Africa. So I think that is just the principle issue that do play a very, very big, even when we deal with very, very big important issues, we have to make the decision on what is in the long term the most important.
Thanks, DJ. The water harvesting is one of the interesting projects that, to be quite frank, we really wanted to happen because it was going to happen in the rural areas. And one of the things that was going to do was to test these filters, which were going to purify the harvested water to ensure that they are healthy for consumption. So in that process, we find that you have the main applicant being the Durban University of Technology. And you have other participants who in essence have the hold of the IP. And in the process of implementing the project, the two partners did not get along. And we did a lot of facilitation and a lot of engagement to ensure that at the end of the day, we are able to implement the project. But to a point where the one who in essence have some leverage on the IP decided to pull out, then it will mean that whatever action that we do, we should be mindful that in the future we might be caught up into the IP issues. And these were mainly going to start with testing. From testing, it was going to be a rollout. So if we cannot solve the whole issue of the IP, automatically it takes us off in terms of the actual implementation, because for us what we wanted is the whole issue of rainwater harvesting and ensuring that the communities get the potable drinking water. So it's not automatic that we can just take it and try it in Limpopo or try it in Switzerland. You would need experts to come on board.
No. You are not speaking to little children. We understand that. We understand that there are people who are blind. We understand that they needed to come and first test and roll out. And we were prepared to support them financially because of the public good. But they fought. That's where we are. We are saying their fighting does not minimize the importance of the project. And at this point in time, the IP still resides with them or him or whatever. That's why we are saying, because you see the problem is that if we then also just say, as limitation, we act like people who do not care for those people in the rural areas who need this water as of last week. We are saying do more. That's all we are saying. As for what you need to do, we don't know. We don't work in green funds, by the way. And we never said roll out this to Limpopo, whatever. You can't because you don't even have the IP in Kosiyamesu. We need to resolve this matter because we see the importance. We see the importance of this. How you resolve it, you'll tell us when you come back, don't worry. How you resolve it with the university and the person involved, if you want mediation, we are there. We are ready to assist you if you want us to come in. Just on the question of principle, DG. Because well, if you are saying there are others who can deliver the same, fine, deliver it. If you are saying there are others who can deliver it, we have no problem at all. But we are saying this is quite an important aspect. Then the CSIR one, is it capacity as well? So we have got scientists there who have no capacity, but they apply.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks. We have had the recommendation loud and clear. On the CSR one, Chair, the issues there was the whole issue of an agreement with Erwat. Because for you to facilitate the biogas production, you would need the waste, water waste. So, unfortunately, Erwat did not sign off in terms of their agreement with the CSIR. They were supposed to sign off as the board of Erwat to acknowledge and agree that they will provide that wastewater for this biogas. So they did not sign, the board did not sign off on that. And that, without that, you are not going to have the feedstock for the project.
Again, you decided that, well, they don't agree, we don't fund, you did not intervene.
Chair, this followed a month and months of engagement. And I can say the same on the Durban Westville. It's a very old project. There has been an engagement, there has been disbursement, there has been mediation and facilitation from the Green Fund team. But if you reach a point where you realize that there is just stagnancy from one of the parties, it becomes quite difficult for actual implementation.
That's why then you come to people you report to. And those people say, now your enough was not enough. Unfortunately, that's where you are now. That your enough was not enough. Go back there. Get into that fighting ring, bring back those If you need to, you might have other mechanisms. Because you have been dealing with this matter, you might have other mechanisms of how you can resolve it. But ultimately, we think the purpose for which the application was made is still valid from where was it. Yes,
sir. I'm just even thinking that perhaps we are not getting the real reason. On the CSIR one, it can't be that they just did not want to sign. They must have advanced the reason. I'm just saying, perhaps we don't necessarily need to get those reasons here, but I'm saying if a party, because CSIR did their own scientific research and said this is viable, and application was made, knowing the implications that the board, whoever will need to sign, they knew about those. It was not something they discovered at the point of having to sign. Now, whoever did not commit surely did the advanced reasons why. You know, and you might have seen those reasons, whether they are valid or not. You were engaging on their reasons, not just on being adamant not to sign when this whole thing is reasonable. So I'm just saying that we are not getting the crux of exactly what it is, the nature of this whole situation.
We will get to the nitty-gritties later. Because I think fundamentally we are saying let's try and assist in whatever way to resolve within the law and within our principles of governance and not outside those principles because we don't know. You have not told us the reasons at any rate. You just said that they just did not see eye to eye. Maybe some wanted better shareholding, what, all these issues. They come to them. Business is a terrible place. Business. This is called business. Thank God, keep me here in Parliament. Don't make me a business person. Once you become a business person, you lose your soul. I can tell you that. You lose. It's a cutthroat environment. But I wouldn't like them to go to the details because there will be no party positions there. It will be individual positions after we listen to the argument, to listen to the reasons. It will be individual positions because I will also differ with the whip and differ with everybody because this is a cutthroat industry. But we have got laws, we have got the principles, and we have got the mandate of the Green Fund. Within all that, find a way of how do we resuscitate. Colleagues, I think these were good discussions. Obviously, we will await another engagement with you beyond the project. So that we are together on where the Green Fund fits in the various instruments we have to deal with the difficulties we face in the environment sector, including in greening our economy. Where this Green Fund fits and what again then informs its disbursement policy. But of course you have also observed that if it captures the imagination of everybody, it should not be difficult to have others who will invest in the fund, not project a project. If the fund is seen as taking forward our climate change response policy, which is very progressive, indeed we should have many, many people internationally and nationally investing to this good cause. Including the private sector, including your financial sector, So then various sectors of the economy, the mere fact that they are not investing, I think we have every reason to do this overview that you said you are doing, GG. And we await it eagerly. We await that overview so that we can then engage on these matters when you come back. But that does not take away the importance of the project that we have funded. They are quite important projects. We can see the link between this project and the South Africa would like to live in tomorrow, including the intention of the research projects and the projects themselves, the capacity building. You know, if there's one area of capacity building that we need, if I was not in Parliament, I would have put an application to capacitate our local municipality on climate change. What should be? In fact, I can tell you, even as we speak now, their response to this calamity is either non-existent, apart from the metros, of course. Apart from the metros, but in many of these municipalities, we have serious difficulties. How do we get in? The other area, it's nice and good for us to have these discussions at this level. But the effect of a continued high carbon economy and the resultant disaster will not hit Parliament. It will hit the people out there. How do we engage with our people on this matter? It's one area, and I know that I'm throwing it through the window. Because I don't think that there is wonderful engagement with our people on matters of the environment. That's why even when we speak on these matters, even there in Parliament, there are very few people who come. Even those who come, at times they don't even understand what we're saying. What do we do to do things differently? Because ultimately, if these natural resources are not preserved and conserved to be used sustainably for the benefit of the entire nation, when these resources are no more, unfortunately, these people of our country will come to us, but what the hell did you do? We no longer have even an ocean now because it has dried up. We have storms every day. We have heat waves. We are dying of these heat waves. Couldn't you foresee this as our public reps? What did you do? How did you use the green funds to mitigate against this chaos and the natural disaster of disasters that we see now? Those of us who have watched the end of the world, I don't know how many of you have, I shudder when I think of what might happen 30 years from now or 50 years from now. Because what we see in these television screens could be real. Could be real when you see what is this thing that that destroyed many parts of Japan and some countries when the sea goes out of the sea, gets into inland. That's tsunami. When you have tsunamis all over the country, including Cape Town, and the death and they just flattened Cape Town. Flattened heaven and everywhere. And I'm saying these things, colleagues, because they look far-fetched, but they, some semblance of it did happen in Durban, by the way, the other year, where the sea went beyond its natural habitat. And these things can happen. The people who are living in the areas that are engulfed by the seas, what do you call them? Islands. They are the ones who are saying even our response to climate change and the threat is not fast enough because they might have no island soon. Even our 50-year span of dealing with this and the greenhouse gas coming down easy after 50 years as a country and your scenario. They are saying, you, where we will not even have countries by then, those people who live in the islands. That's what they are saying. That by that 50-year span of yours, maybe you might have South Africa, but we who live here, the sea level would have gone up to such an extent that it would have enveloped every little island, including Seychelles, that is around here. Now, we deal holistically with these matters, we must then find what is the role of our Green Fund in relation to this end of the world narrative that is being talked about. And how do we do things differently now? Empowered by the Green Fund and innovated by the Green Fund to avert in our own little way. Because whatever we do as South Africa, if others continue business as usual and greenhouse gas continues to be emitted, carbon dioxide continues to be emitted into the atmosphere, we might as well say, let's just wait for that end of the world. That's why the importance of the Paris Conference of Parties at the end of this year. So I'm just saying this thing, that whatever it is that we do, colleagues and comrades and friends, and my friend from the EFF, whatever we do, we must know that we have this calamity looming. It's real. We have this calamity looming, and we have this disaster, natural disaster, looming, and it has started, as I've said, with the smelting or melting of the ice in Antarctica. It is melting as we speak now, because of the heat that we have generated through our industrial action. Now, we have not even industrialized ourselves, you know. It's trying so that have industrialized. See, now we are still trying to think about an industrial policy here in Zimalenda. It's so terrible to be poor. Colleagues, with those words, then let's thank all of you members. Before we allow you to go, you know that we dealt with the chiefs of the ratification exercise here. Now, I will read here, and if you agree, you will say, yes, you agree. Report of the Portfolio Committee on Environmental Affairs on the ratification of the Berne Amendments to the Basel Convention on the Control of Transboundary Movement of Hazardous Waste and their disposal, dated 12 May 2015. The Portfolio Committee on Environmental Affairs, having considered the request for approval by the Parliament of the acceptance of the Berne Amendment to the Basel Convention on the Control of Transboundary Movements of Hazardous Waste and their disposal, tabled in terms of Section 1 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, recommends that the House ratify the said amendment. Is that your view? Bam. Section 231(2) of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, 1996. Yes, sir.
Chair, I just hope now he's familiar with the section. Yeah, but Chair, I think it does capture the spirit of the discussion that we had earlier.
this particular meeting. Thanks.
Any said that there is a mover. Any seconder? Eka.
Mr. Chair, the department, and colleagues, I second.
Seconder. Any disagreements? None. Thank you. By we unanimously agree that we'll ratify. What is the problem, Robert? You don't have a mandate. Then they must withdraw you. Colleagues, this the ratification that we talked to of the Basel Convention or amendment to the Basel Convention here stands ratified by the committee. Of course, we will now take it to the bigger house because it must be the Parliament of the Republic that ratifies. We will make a recommendation to Parliament for ratification. Thank you very much. I know there is food that is coming. You see, we hold you accountable. We wouldn't like you to do anything that is called wasteful or fruitless expenditure. Now, you must not also make us to do the same. There's food that is coming. I hope the food is there now. Suppose we're outside. I think it's outside there. DG, and colleagues, thank you very much. It was a wonderful engagement, and we hope that you also take it in that spirit. This meeting stands adjourned.
I just want to your name and DG and tell who that guy is. Goddard.
My name is Tolu Romaro.
Which facilitates resource efficiency and low carbon trajectory.
Resource efficiency?
Yes. And low carbon.
And low carbon trajectory.
Yes.
Trajectory.
Yes.
And then you said now the green fund, the mechanics.
One of the tools, one of the mechanisms to facilitate implementation of projects that one does to achieve.
Okay, so one of the mechanics that helps us to achieve what we want to do.
To achieve the green economy. Achieve the green economy trajectory.
Or the green economy trajectory.
Mm.
Okay. And then one other thing I didn't understand is the issue of free state. Not free state, you get an allocation, or what was this called? Free state.
Free state did get, it was lagging behind.
Oh, free state.
Yes, free state was lagging behind with the implementation. And one of the interventions was to fast track the procurement of those waste bins.
Fast track?
Yeah.
Procurement.
Procurement of the dust bin, waste bin.
Waste bin.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm.
And then Mpumalanga and Limpopo.
Mpumalanga and Limpopo, that project, Oxpecker project,
yeah,
falls between Mpumalanga and Limpopo.
Yeah.
Hence, on the allocation, I put one allocation
because
of the full project.
No, I didn't get that. Because they say Mpumalanga and Limpopo didn't get an allocation.
Oh, they were saying Limpopo didn't get an allocation.
Oh, it's Limpopo.
It's Limpopo.
They didn't get an allocation.
Yes, that's what they were saying on the sheet. Because that project, I put it under Mpumalanga, but it is shared between Mpumalanga and Limpopo.
So the allocation is shared?
Yes.
Okay.
The project covers Mpumalanga and Limpopo.
Yeah.
You can just say the Oxpecker project. I don't know, but you have the presentation?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Oxpecker, I mean.
Yes. Covers Mpumalanga and Limpopo.
Yeah.
That's why you don't have dedicated funding for Limpopo.
Yeah. I think that's it for now.
Yeah.
But if there are other things that...
I can give you my contact.
Yeah, give me my contact. Yeah. Yeah. How could you respond to your email?
If you want me to prioritize,
yeah,
you can just send it to me a call.
Yeah. Okay. What I'll do, I just send you an email, and then
give me a call. Yeah. Because it depends on where I am.
Yeah.
If
okay.
I'm out of the office, it will be in the evening.
Yeah.
When I get hold of that.
Okay.
Maybe I can check that for you so that you
have. Yeah. Okay. Okay. sounds good. What else?
Was there a problem in anything that you need clarity and need to lay some extra, you know,
things on it? Yeah, sure.
If you feel like that,
just because I've had so much things had of this thing.
I think right, and send it for us to visit
up. Okay. Okay, good. Sure, man.